Do you want to know what's really fun about being a woman?
This is starting to sound like a Shania Twain song.
Man, I feel like I'm in perimenopause. Ugh, the brain fog, the mood swings, the night sweats, the unpredictable cycles. Many women enter perimenopause and they don't even realize what's happening to their body, and it's directly impacting how they're making major life decisions.
You get divorce strategy on this podcast, but when it comes to strategy for what's happening inside your body, our friends at Natural Cycles are here to help. Their new app mode, NC Perimenopause, within the Natural Cycles app interprets those hormonal shifts with data and science.
So I'm currently using the app and the intel is fascinating. It doesn't just track symptoms. It helps me see patterns and it helps me connect the dots between my hormones, my symptoms, and my lifestyle. It even estimates what stage of perimenopause I'm in. I love that it helps me better understand what's going on with my body and why I have days where it's more difficult to make decisions than others. And that clarity really matters. You can even download a personalized report that you can bring to your doctor, which makes those appointments way more productive.
Natural Cycles is a female-founded digital health company that analyzes biomarker data to help users better understand their cycles. NC Perimenopause is for anyone experiencing or anyone who thinks they may be experiencing perimenopause, from the first hormone-related changes to your cycle or symptoms all the way until menopause, when your periods stop. Learn more and give it a shot right alongside Andrea.
Yes, let's do this thing together. You are not alone in your divorce or this transition. There are tools to help you make sense of what your body is doing. Visit naturalcycles.com and use code DIVORCE. Or tap the link in the show notes to learn more about how you can save on a subscription.
The How Not to Suck at Divorce podcast cannot be copied or rebroadcast without consent. This podcast does not contain legal advice. The information provided on the podcast and the resources available are not intended as and shall not be construed or understood to be legal advice.
This is who this person is. This is who that person is.
That's when the judges start to get frustrated. It's like, don't waste my time. Like, this isn't that big of a deal.
And this is How Not to Suck at Divorce. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another riveting episode of How Not to Suck at Divorce. I am one of your hosts, Andrea Rappaport, and joined with me via Zoom is my good friend. Say your name.
Morgan Stockstill.
There you go. So dramatic tonight. It's a beautiful Sunday night. Where we are, probably where you are too, but you're not going to be listening to this on a Sunday night. It was warm today. I was feeling it. I think you and I were both being moms today. Momming so hard. And now we're both sitting in front of our computers with our very cool blue light glasses on, ready to bring you some hard-hitting information about what do you do and how do you do if you are looking to modify child support post your divorce? Big topic. Right. Mm-hmm. Big topic. I have heard so much about this lately. And so I know that this is going to be information that our listeners are really going to be eating with a spoon and hopefully applying to their lives. Before we get to that, I need to tell you, I've got not one, but two things that I am highly obsessed with right now.
Whoa, I can't wait over here.
Oh.
I love this segment because it brings about things that we didn't even know we needed.
Things that we're literally obsessed with. Okay, so we're coming into the warmer months here. We're all figuring out like what's our spring summer wardrobe. And I don't know, Morgan, because you and I have not talked fashion in a while, but this summer I am fully embracing the golf skirt, tennis skirt situation.
I'm still hot and cold. So give me some information on that.
Well, when you are a woman of a certain age or body type, form, shape, and you may or may not have just had a hysterectomy like myself, you have thighs that are more ample than not, meaning that sometimes, ample, meaning that sometimes wearing shorts are not so flattering, because it just reminds me of my youth that has gone girl out the window. And now I'm like, damn, look at that body. Some days are good for shorts, especially I could do cute shorts, especially if I'm wearing like a heel. But if I'm just carting around town and I'm wearing my funky sneakers, which BTW, that's the other thing I'm obsessed with. And I'll get to that in a second. I'm into the short skirt. Now,
is it called a skort?
Yeah, well, I don't think they're called a skort. They are a skort because they've got the shorts underneath, or like the bicycle shorts, which, hold on, side note, have you gotten brave enough yet to wear those like bicycle short leggings that all the women are wearing right now?
So I did wear those once last year with like a crop top, and I felt like I was 25 again on spring break, of course, with my family, et cetera, because I wanted to be hip. And then every time I open my drawer and I see them looking at me, I'm like, I just feel inappropriate all around if those even come out.
Oh my God. I bought a pair. I bought like a double. I was at Marshall's and they had like two, like, I can't remember who they were by, but some like designer ones that Marshall's had. And they were like, you know, clipped together like a twofer kind of situation. So I bought them and I put them in my drawer and I shall just look at them. Maybe I'll look at them this season. If they're still around next season, then maybe I will try them. I haven't even put them on yet because I'm terrified and I just don't get it. I don't get it.
Well, it's like, yeah, there's so much to talk about those, but yeah, moving on. I mean, for you and your skort. Yeah.
So this skort though, it's like the bicycle leggings underneath it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's like that. Okay. Uh-huh. Now, next thing I want to say is they're not all created equally.
That's what I was just going to say, because I have two in my drawers right now. One, just like every time I put it on, it's like it's pulling in a different area. It's inappropriate. It feels icky. And the other one, I just feel like so frumpy and it's just kind of hanging. So is there a sweet spot?
I kind of feel like, so I think it depends on your body shape. For me, and I'm a short girl, like I'm 5'4" on a real good day. So the shorter, the better. Like if I need to wear ones that are super short and that kind of like kick out a little bit, if it's too long, then I look super frumpy, dumpy, humpty, dumpy, humpty, dumpty, awfulness.
Just bad.
Bad. Yeah, real bad. And the other thing is the pattern. Like I bought one the other day and I made the stupid novice decision to rip off the tags. I didn't even cut them off. I ripped them off before I put them on, because I'm like, this is going to be so cute. I put it on. I almost screamed in front of my mirror because where the pattern hits, like right on like my lower stomach area, almost like it almost says like, everybody look here. She's got extra fat right here. Check this out. And I hate it.
Look at that roll. Look at that roll.
Like, do that Tootsie roll. Like, it's awful, awful, awful. So, but I have some that I like. Maybe next week I will report back with the brands that I'm very comfortable saying, go get this. I'm not ready to do that today.
Okay, that's fair.
However, what I am ready to tell you, moving on to second obsession. So I rock funky sneakers. That's like always been my thing. I love a good funky sneaker and I have tons of them and tons of like super expensive designer ones. The ones that I get the most compliments on are these cheapy platform sneakers from Amazon that came straight off the boat from China.
Stop it. This is up my alley. Give me the details.
They're so cute. I feel like they're like $30-something. They come in different colors. I ordered mine in burnt orange. No, I'm just kidding. I just
you and this damn color scheme is just like a pumpkin waiting to happen.
I just want to see your face. Oh God. No, guys, for those of you who don't get the joke, Morgan always makes fun of me because I bought these joggers in burnt orange and it kills her.
It kills me because there's, what do you match with burnt orange? Anyway, moving on.
I bought them in red. I bought them in like a red, and it's like a red, shiny, I mean, it's not leather, it's pleather. And it's got like a real funky gold chain on the side. It's funky. It is cool. And I'm telling you, people, the other day I was at Nordstrom picking up a handbag, and the women who work at Nordstrom stopped me, wanted to know where my sneakers were from. I sent them the Amazon link and they ordered them right in front of me.
Okay. Don't hold out on me. I need them.
Hashtag not sponsored by Amazon, but it should be. Hit me up. I'm going to send you the link. I'm obsessed, and I'm going to post the link in the show notes because everybody deserves to have a very cute pair of sneakers, whether you need more child support, whether you're paying too much for your child support, or you ready to modify, let's do it in style. Am I right?
You're right. Let's talk about it.
Okay, so child support. What the hell? Okay. This is a huge topic that I've been hearing so much about, modifying your child support post-divorce. And I really wanted to give our listeners all of these do's and don'ts of doing this so that they don't waste time and they don't waste money. So with that, Morgan, what the hell do people do?
Okay, so there's two kind of people so that we think of when you're modifying child support. There's either the person who's receiving child support that doesn't think they're receiving enough, or it's the person paying child support that thinks they're paying way too much. Mm-hmm. But before we get there, when we're talking about modifying child support for our listeners, we're talking about there's already been an order set, or there's already been a judgment, you're already divorced, and the child support is set. So we're talking about modifying that number post-divorce. It also does kind of come into play a little bit during the divorce if you wanted to modify that number during the divorce, because a modification, at least where I am from, is a modification any way you look at it. But what we're focusing on today is after your divorce, if there's child support set, how do you modify it?
And right. Where's the best place to start? Like, let's start with a group of people who are wanting to petition for more. How do you do? I think that what I would really like to help people talk through is how do you approach this in a way that's not, hey, listen, motherfucker, you don't give me enough in child support, and I'm going to take you back to court because I know you're making more money than you claim you are. And blah, 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 blah. So what do you do? Where's the first place someone should start if they feel like, gosh, he or she is only giving me, $700 a month, but I know that I should be getting way more. What do they do?
Yeah. So the first thing, and this goes for both, whether you're the recipient of child support or the payor of child support. So if you think you're paying too much or you're not getting enough, this is what you have to remember. So where I am from, and probably most other states, you have to prove a substantial change in circumstances. And what does that mean? Mm-hmm. Well, it means what's changed since your order was entered, since your child support was entered. So is it your income has gone up or down? And where I'm from, that typically means about a 10% or more swing. So if you're making, five extra dollars, that's not going to do it generally. 10% or more swing we're talking about, has the income gone up or down? So that's one way that could be a substantial change. Another thing could be unexpected expenses or needs. For instance, let's just say you're the recipient of child support and you have the children living with you. And let's just say that, God forbid, one of the children has a medical issue that requires specialized schooling or more, trips to and from the doctor or specialized care, that you essentially are taking on the majority of the costs. That's a substantial change in circumstance. So those are just kind of hitting the surface. So the first thing is identify what has changed. And that's what I want you to do is even write down, things that may be non-issues. Like, you may be like, oh, this doesn't probably matter. Write all those down, because any attorney you speak with, they're going to want to see the whole picture.
Well, what if, I know that for a lot of people, there's a policy with their MSA their MSA, if they have children, where every year they remit their tax information.
Yes. And I love that. because it gives a little bit of transparency. So for somebody who's in the middle of a divorce, that's a thing that you may want to add into your divorce decree, that every year, so long as you're receiving child support or paying it, depending on which side you're on, you may want to have some kind of term in there that you have to exchange tax returns each year.
So let's say that, let's just do co-parent A, co-parent B. Let's say co-parent A makes less money than co-parent B. So co-parent A is currently receiving child support. They're doing their year annual, you know, whatever, showing each other the tax returns. And you see that co-parent B is now making a substantial, let's say 10% more money than they were making in the past. Is it an automatic adjustment, or what else come, like, what do those steps look like?
So it all depends on what your settlement agreement says. Okay. Sometimes those automatic adjustments, or what we call true ups, are built in to a child support order. So for instance, what I'm talking about is, let's just say, for instance, somebody makes $50,000 base salary. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times the court will set the child support on that $50,000 base. But then let's say the person gets a bonus that fluctuates on top of that salary. There could be a true up of any monies above and beyond that $50,000. So it's not as easy, because you may already, your true up may encompass this extra money. So you want to make sure whether it does or doesn't. If it doesn't, and it's just you get, you know, $5 a month in child support, and you see that your ex-spouse is making substantially more, usually you have to go back to court if you can't agree on it. So you have to petition the court to pay more child support due to the substantial change, the more income.
So, and just to be clear, a true up is what?
A true up is essentially some kind of percentage set, or some kind of amount set or due to the recipient of child support. So, and usually what a true up is done, or when it's done, is when the income is fluctuating. So it's not just, you know, I know my ex makes $50,000. A lot of people are like, no, you know, my ex makes $50,000, but they make way more money in this fluctuating bonus. And okay, I want to make sure that I get a percentage of that bonus.
Okay. Or like somebody who has a commissioned based gig.
Yep. Exactly.
Like a lot of salespeople.
Yep. Yeah. Or on the higher end people, they have like a lot of restricted stock, or right, you know, very complex compensation packages. That's when we're starting to look at these true up provisions.
Okay. What about, and I don't think that this happens so often, but changes in parenting time?
Yes. So where I am, again, in Illinois, little different in every other state, but our statute or our law is predicated on how many overnights you have with the children. So meaning, if you are under our guideline, and, you know, not my favorite guideline, but it does look at how many overnights you have when setting child support. And the child support fluctuates the more overnights you have, especially if you hit this one magic number in Illinois, which is over 146 overnights, which is, you know, kind of ridiculous in my mind that you're counting overnights with your children based upon support. But that's another discussion for another point. So yes, let's just say, for instance, that you are the parent that is receiving child support, and it's based upon a 50-50 schedule. So you have the kids 50% of the time, your ex-spouse has them 50% of the time. And then let's just say your ex-spouse now has been just unexpectedly traveling for work all the time, and you've got the children 80% of the time now. In my mind, where I am, I think that that is a substantial change that may be enough to go into court. But that leads me into my number two point, which is we want to consider the past, present, and the future. So it's not as easy and not as black and white, kind of what Andrea just touched on, which is, oh, I know they're making more money, should I just run back into court? No. We want to put together a whole package as a good lawyer for you. We don't want to just say, yeah, that sounds good, go to court, and then we have some bumps that we didn't expect. So what I'm saying when I say consider the past, present, and future, I want to know what has happened in the past that maybe we, that was set child support or that child support was set on? What is going on now? And then what's in the future? And what do I mean by the future? This is important because today you could say, hey, I'm owed a lot of child support right now. I know my ex is making way more money. And then I may ask that second question to a client and say, okay, but what does next year look like for you? Oh, well, you know, it's funny you say that. Next year, I am going to be the president of my company. So my salary is going to double. So you need to look at the whole package of what could happen, because a good lawyer does not want to send you into court if there's going to be other things coming down the pike.
What about for a lot of our listeners who fall into the category of their divorce was finalized during COVID, when a lot of people were out of work or their work income was significantly impacted because, you know, the world shut down? If things were finalized during that time when money was kind of bleak for a lot of people and things looked a certain way, and now it's different, how does that fall into the equation of all of this?
That's a really good question. And that actually leads me into my number three point, which is, and this is funny because you and I haven't even talked about these points tonight. So you're just leading me right into the direction. You're just like reading my mind. Number three in my mind is get your facts right. So see if it's worth it to go back to court. And what I mean by that is if you think about the first three things, one is what's changed? Is it income? Is it expenses? Is it needs? So you want to get that together. The second thing is consider your past, present, and your future and talk to your lawyer about it. But the third is get your facts right. See if it's worth it. And the reason I say that is because a good lawyer will take number one and two and will basically run different scenarios for you. Because remember, this costs money, everybody. Not many people on the other side agree to just pay you more because you want more money. There is usually a path to getting more money. And a lot of times that includes more court time or more mediation. And it's expensive. And we all know that we value our dollars. So my point to you is, get your facts right with your lawyer, have them run scenarios for you. It's worth a few hundred or $1,000 or whatever it ends up being for them to give you the good, bad, and the ugly of what going back to court looks like, because they can run you hard numbers. And so some people, it's all different depending on who you are, but it may be worth it to you. And other people may look at those numbers and be like, yeah, right, not doing this. But you don't know till you ask or look into it, right?
Right. And I think that what's so important about what you just said is that gives people the opportunity to weigh what do I possibly have to gain versus what am I going to lose in playing in like the wild, wild west of family court again.
Right.
But these things can be mediated out, correct?
Correct. I would always go there first. I mean, we've done an episode on mediation. You know how much I appreciate mediation.
Right.
I think it's always important to try that first, because any good lawyer on either side will tell their client, look, if we can settle this here in mediation, even though you don't, let's say, for instance, Andrea, you represent the person who wants more child support, and I represent the one who's paying the child support and doesn't want to pay any more money. Mm-hmm. If I'm that lawyer, I'm going to be telling my client, okay, you may not like mediation. You may say that this person does not deserve another dollar, but here's the thing. Here are your risks. And guess what you're going to pay if you go to court and lose. So we could maybe mitigate your risk here by going to mediation and working something out to make Andrea happy, but also you don't lose the farm. You know what I'm saying?
Now, after I asked that question, I started to think, isn't there a stupid calculator and a formula involved for all of this? So why is it something that gets discussed? I mean, it's so when you're initially setting child support, don't most cases just go off of this formula? Like you kind of plug the numbers in and then whatever the machine spits out, that's what it is.
Yes and no. And here's the reason I say that. In Illinois, there's a calculator, mm-hmm. but most of my cases don't fit into the calculator because they are above the threshold of the calculator, meaning the calculator cuts off at $500,000 of combined income. And I'm fortunate to have, you know, a lot of high-end clients. However, that doesn't mean that we don't use the calculator a lot, just to see kind of what would be extrapolated if you were using that calculator. And yes, Andrea, there's a lot of cases that fall in that 500,000 or less. Mm-hmm. So should be a straight calculation. The problem is, at least, you know, here, I see a lot of times that the calculator is pretty low. So for instance, it shoots out a really low amount of child support for somebody. And anyone raising children in, you know, around a city, for instance, probably is going to say they may need more child support. They just can't make it under that guideline. So then we may have an argument about needs and what, you know, here we know what the guideline is, but we would say essentially, hey, but I'm not even going to be able to meet our standard of living and I need more child support. And here's why. So there is a bigger discussion potentially to be had.
But if the person that you're like, let's say there's clearly a need and you can prove the need, but if the person you're asking for the child support from doesn't make that much money anymore, then you're still kind of screwed, correct?
Yes. Yes. You are still kind of screwed. That's the bottom line. Yes. Yeah. There is a small chance that a good lawyer could go to court and argue for us a little bit more, et cetera. Correct. But this is where I'm going on our number three, which is exactly what you were just saying. Know your risks, mm-hmm. know what your slam dunk is, know what your middle ground is, and know what your worst case is, and then decide whether you want to go back. But I do want to say, I've got one more point. I know we love to talk in threes, but I've got the fourth point. It's a fourth point on this thing, which is, we always talk about this strategy. Once you have those three things, you want a comprehensive strategy for your lawyer, from your lawyer, to tell you exactly, if I say yes, let's go forward, what does it look like? And what I mean too by that is, you want to ask your lawyer, what could backfire on me? You know, what could go wrong? What am I not seeing here? Because a lot of people, especially when we're talking about money and children, it's easy to get a one-track mind. Like, I am entitled to this. I am entitled to pay less child support. I am entitled to more child support, et cetera. And it's hard to see that outside of that tunnel vision. And so, for instance, I'm going to tell you a story about a client that I had, and one of the things that I don't like to do. For instance, I had a client who was the payor, so paying the child support. The client wanted more parenting time. So that was originally what we started with. So we had filed for more parenting time, which was totally acceptable. And this client probably deserved more parenting time. In the middle of the parenting time request, our client came to us and said, well, I also want to pay less child support. So I want to file a motion for a reduction in child support. And my recommendation to this person at that point was, put the brakes on. Because the minute you file a motion to reduce your child support, it's going to, whether you intend to do it or not, hurt you negatively in seeking more parenting time, because they're going to think, and what the judge may think, that you are asking for more parenting time to get a reduced child support. So you have to see the huge picture there. Mm-hmm. And then you're the same client, I will tell you, this is what I'm talking about, big picture, past, present, and future. Uh-oh. Then the client says to us, okay, once we got a more parenting time, the client says, all right, now I really do want to file my motion to reduce child support. And we said, okay, but you know, what's changed is not a big change. You've got some risk here. We don't know if it's a substantial enough change. Is there anything on the horizon, like, that you see that could be a bigger change coming? And this client said, oh, well, yes, as a matter of fact, in 6 months, I'm retiring from my job because I'm that age and the job is essentially forcing me out because I'm of retirement age and I'm going to be retired. And we said, again, put the brakes on, because right now I'm not sure that your case is 100% a substantial change in circumstance. A judge may find against you on that. But in 6 months, the minute you retire because you're getting forced out, that is a slam dunk for you. So just hold it for 6 more months. So that's what I'm talking about your lawyer really knowing the big picture to give you a good strategy.
And that's why it's also important that you, as a client, play ball with your attorney.
So yes.
If they're asking you these questions, they're asking you for a reason. Don't waste billable hours fighting with them because, you know, you think you know best. Let's recap these steps for the person petitioning for more money, and then we'll switch to the payor side and talk about what we need to have them do. So I've already forgot the step one. Step one.
Let me go through it. Okay. So step one is you need to know what has changed and document it. So is it income has increased or decreased? Is it expenses or needs have, you know, substantially increased or decreased? Is there something else that has gone on that you're like, I'm not sure if that would be a substantial change in circumstance? Just run it by your lawyer. So number one is what has changed? Document it. Number two, consider the past, present, and future. So think about it, even put a pen to paper about ideas of what has happened in the past, what's going on now, and is there anything on the horizon that your lawyer needs to know? Number three, get your facts straight. And what I mean by that is see if it's worth it. Give all of number one and two to your lawyer on a silver platter and ask them to run scenarios for you. And number four, after you've gotten these scenarios, get a full strategy and ask your lawyer in the strategy, what am I not thinking about? What could backfire on me? Is there any other better time to potentially think about doing this? Those are four steps to really kind of get you in the right path going forward to make the right decision, because Andrea and I are all about having the information to make the best decision possible.
Right. And especially in this situation, this is such an easy place for you to spend a whole lot of money with really nothing fruitful coming back. So we don't want you to do that, obviously. And we certainly don't want you to go into something blind without having all the information that you deserve to have. That's why we do the show. Okay, so now let's say I'm so tired of paying my ex child support. I decided they don't need it. I decided that I could use that money elsewhere. They have too much of my money and I'm done. What do they do? Do they, like you just mentioned, your client who was wanting to do this, right? And I don't mean to say that and like, and to be so facetious, there could be completely justified reasons why somebody, right? Why don't we give some of those examples? Because I can't think of any, but why don't you give me some example? Like what, that your ex is now making a ton of money? Would that be?
Yes, that could be. That could be. So remember that child support is set on both people now in Illinois. It used not to be. But in Illinois, child support is looked at both incomes. So let's just say your income has stayed the same, but your ex's has shot up, or you think so. That could be a substantial change in circumstance. So that's definitely something to think about. Another thing we touched on briefly, let's just say that you originally when you got this child support entered, you had the kids 40% at the time. And now because your ex is going back to work and going full time, you have the kids, 70% of the time. That could be a substantial change in circumstance. Another thing is if your income tanks, that could be a substantial change in circumstance. Also, you want to look at your marital settlement agreement. And there's a lot of, sometimes I see marital settlement agreements that I've drafted or also that have come from other lawyers that have other triggers, resets. But one of the biggest reasons that child support is reset is one of the child or children emancipates. So let's say you're paying, $10, and I'm joking, this is the lowest amount. I mean, I wouldn't even buy you two Starbucks, but you're paying $10 in child support for two children. And one of your children graduates high school and goes off to college. Well, now that is an automatic substantial change in circumstance that, would have the court reset child support for only one child. There's only one child there.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. What else would there be? So, okay, let's say that someone has justified reasons for wanting to lower their monthly child support payment, right? Or they think that they do. What are their steps?
It's going to be very similar.
Yeah.
It's very similar. So what's changed? You're going to figure out what's changed. Give your lawyer something to work with. Even if it's a crappy change in your mind, give them something to work with to ask you more questions. Number two, consider past, present, and future. For instance, again, if you're making good, you're making pretty good money and the child support's set on that, and then your ex goes back to work and then that person starts making good money, and then you come to me and say, hey, I've got to reduce it because they're making more money. I may say, yeah, that probably sounds about right. And then you tell me, oh, by the way, next year I'm going to be the president of this organization and my salary is going to triple. That may be something that we put the brakes on. So what's going on there? And then number three, get your facts. Let your lawyer run a million different scenarios on all the different income scenarios, and let's figure out where the numbers fall. And then finally, strategy. Let's figure out if anything can backfire on you, because you don't want to look bad in front of the judge, especially if you have other petitions going. Or a lot of times in cases, this, you know, kind of sounds, a lot of people probably will not think of it like this, but a lot of times we get divorces done and we're like, all right, listen, our strategy is in a few years or in a year, this is what we're doing to clean this up. And there's different reasons to do it, but we know that this party is going to go back to court. Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying to you is, if child support, you want to reduce the child support, but you know you have to go back to court for something else, you may want to think about that. And how does it fit into the puzzle?
Right. Because so much of your relationship post-divorce, or even like during the process, everything does fit together like a puzzle, right? Like,
right.
It's not just one simple thing. How often can child support be modified? Is there like a limit? Do you get to a point where a judge is like, no, you're done. We're done here.
Well, so, you know, in Illinois, child support is always modifiable. So that's the good news. Okay. It's always modifiable. So hypothetically, you could be modifying it all the time. But again, you have to meet that threshold of what has changed. So no, the judge isn't going to kick you out. But if it's not that big of a change, that's when the judges start to get frustrated. It's like, don't waste my time. Like, this isn't that big of a deal. This isn't that big of a change.
If somebody does not have it in their MSA that they should exchange tax returns yearly, and I know MSAs cannot be modified, right? Like, what can they petition to exchange tax returns yearly? Or like, no, if you don't have that in your MSA, then that's not something that's in the cards for you.
Well, I think that's an interesting question, and that may vary state to state. I think that it is part of child support. For instance, you know, the income is set on both people's incomes. So, or I should say the child support is set on both people's incomes and how many overnights. So I would say if you went back for child support and then you have a valid reason to ask the judge to demand that tax returns are changed, especially if there's any type of true up. Because with a true up or fluctuating income, you need to know what the other person is making in order to do those calculations.
Do you have any guidance or advice on how people, I'm just thinking about a divorced couple who, let's say that they communicate okay, they're not buddies, they're not, you know, hanging out, getting frozen yogurt together, but they're also not like having massive like wars when they exchange the kids, right? Okay. Let's say that co-parent A petitions co-parent B for more child support. And now co-parent B is like, the fuck is this? And they're pissed. How do you mitigate, like, does co-parent A owe a text message to co-parent B before they start this? What do they do to help mitigate tensions so that the children don't pick up on this like stress and chaos that it can cause?
Yeah. So if the couple is kind of how you described it, where they don't love each other, but they don't hate each other, right? I always recommend some kind of thing getting in front of it. So what that means is, if you're able to do a phone call or say something in person in a public place, mm-hmm. That would be ideal. And what I would suggest that somebody say is have your, first of all, do your research, right? Have the reasons, have a few reasons as to why you need more child support that you know that they either can't fight with or are going to be the least dramatic. So for instance, I would have someone call the other side, or they're in a Starbucks without the children. Remember, you're not in front of your children talking about this at all. And they would say, Hey, Sandy, I'm really struggling financially. And, you know, Johnny requires a lot more care. He's going to these specialized programs every, you know, X, Y, and Z day. And I'm taking on the brunt of the driving. And I just can't keep up with all these costs. And we may have to talk about that in the future. So it's on the radar, but it's okay. Not like, hey, MF-er, give me more money today. Right. Or I'm going to take you to court. No one likes being threatened to go to court. No one likes it. It's more of like the softball that, hey, it's coming. I'm struggling. And so that there's no shock when it does come. And then I still think before you just like send a petition over from your lawyer, see if you can send a nice email with your lawyer helping you write it to them, asking to maybe mediate the issue. Hey, I've been thinking about this more. I know we talked about it. I'd like to advance this issue just to have a discussion.
Now, for people who are listening to what you just said, Morgan, and they're like, yeah, well, that's not possible with my eyes, because if I give them a heads up, magically all of their money is going to disappear.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, is that a thing? Is that not a thing?
That's not a thing. I mean, if they've been conniving from the beginning, you've got other discussions to have with your lawyer. Right. But most people, there's a trail. Banks have trails.
Right.
Credit cards have trails. And oh, guess what else has trails? Your income that's deposited wherever it goes, and their income. So, you know, yes, could they clear out their bank account and look like a complete idiot? For sure. But we have that information. So highly unlikely that it would just all disappear and we'd not be able to find anything.
Okay. So we're gonna wrap this conversation, because the last thing we want to do is overwhelm you guys with so many action steps and so much information. And I do want to say with that if we have left you with more questions, you know what to do. You get on your little phone or your computer and you send us an email or a DM, and we will make sure that you get the extra assistance or help that you need. I do not want you to walk away from this episode feeling like you're more overwhelmed than you were when you started listening to it. Remember the action steps that we gave you. They're all going to be listed out in the show notes. So don't feel like you had to pull over your car and write things down. But it's really important that before you begin this journey of wanting to reduce your child support or wanting to ask for more child support, that you know, what is this going to involve from my end and what do I actually have to gain? And that's not to say that you don't have something to gain for a lot of people.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny too, because even if you decide it's not the right time to do it, or this doesn't make financial sense for me right now, at least you have the information. And a lot of times we make a plan. We say, hey, it may not work out for you right now, but like, why don't you call us in about 9 months? Let's see where you're at there, because this may have a different implication at that point. So get some peace of mind. Isn't it worth it? Peace of mind is so worth it.
Something else that you could also do is reach out to your attorney and say, what's the most cost-effective way of going about this?
Yep.
There's nothing wrong. Your attorney is well aware that you don't want to pay them billable hours for dicking around and not doing much of anything. They don't want to do that. They right. don't enjoy doing that. So
well, you know, it stinks too, because we have to bill you. I mean, that's right. Just, it's a business. And we also care. I mean, good lawyers care. I care about my clients. I care about trying to do the best I can for them and care about trying to keep their bill down if I can do it. So one way I would suggest that you could try to do it to keep your bills down, ask your attorney to use the associate for this. Mm-hmm. You don't need me to be running child support numbers for you. An associate can do the exact same work, put a beautiful memo together about like your hit it out of the ballpark numbers to your worst case scenarios. And, you know, the partner may or may not even have to glance at it, because that's what associates can do at a really reduced cost.
Absolutely. Because again, we get it. We know that these things get expensive. So we want to make sure that we are arming you all with information so that you're not just hitting your head against a wall, wasting so much time and money if we can help you save a little. Okay. So I want to move in for our final segment on tonight's show, which is fan mail.
Okay, let's see which Nigerian prince DM'd us today.
If you're really a prince, I'll marry you.
This is fan mail.
Okay. Girl, I don't know. You probably haven't really had a chance to check out our Instagram lately because you've been in a big trial, but our Instagram was all a buzz this week over the post that I did promoting our last week's episode, which was Dr. Bill Doherty talking about the problem with some therapists.
Oh, I didn't know it was buzzing.
Hmm. Yeah. And don't you know, I knew when I posted this, that it was going to annoy a lot of people, but okay. I did it anyway, because I thought it was important. What I talked about in the reel was that your therapist should not diagnose your ex or your spouse as a narcissist if they haven't met them, and how also this term narcissist gets thrown around a lot.
Yep.
And it doesn't really help you. Now, there are a lot of people who follow our account. There are a lot of people who follow my personal account who have gone through really traumatic situations and had sustained a lot of mental and emotional abuse and weren't really happy with us bringing up the fact that their therapist should not diagnose their spouse. So I want to speak to that for a minute, because this was in no way, we were not negating what you go through, but it is still really important that you understand that somebody who had, I mean, we talked about this in the episode. I think Bill said that typically most therapists have to see somebody at least 4 times before they can make an official diagnosis. Now, somebody sent me a private message and they're like, if it walks like a duck and talks like a duck, then maybe it's an asshole. We don't
know. Also, it's funny because I also don't even think that was the point of the episode overall. The point was, if this happens, if they diagnose, you know, your ex without meeting them, here's the problems that can come from it. And again, we're just arming people with information and you do with it what you want, because some information it's great for people and others it's not, you know?
What we said and what I say in the caption is the reason why it's dangerous is that it revs everything up in your mind. It takes you to this place of becoming so keyed up and so hyper that it's not setting you up for success, however you're going to handle this situation. Again, if you have not listened to that episode, it's really important that you do, just to understand and just to be calmer and more open and realize really on the other side of it, also all of these different personality disorders that somebody can have, it really doesn't even matter in the end. May mean that somebody is next to impossible to work with, but it doesn't really change who you are, who they are, and where you are, and what you're going to do. I say this with so much love and support and care and understanding. But I just think we are so quick right now to want to put everybody in boxes. This is who this person is. This is who that person is. You are good. You are bad. We are divorced.
Well, some people deserve to be in the box. I mean, I'm just like glancing at some of these comments, you know, I've been digging out from this trial, and some people are right. Like, you know, they probably are married to somebody who has XYZ. Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen it. But I also have seen exactly what Dr. Bill Doherty was talking about, where it backfires so badly and you can't get out from your own way, basically. And you make really poor decisions because somebody with an authoritative figure has said something about your ex, and now that's all you think about. So again, we're here to give you information. And, you know, I kind of like being giving information that makes people think. So hey, I'm okay with it.
So too. And, you know, I think that, you know, for me, I think a lot of people were looking at me sideways because I talk a lot about, you know, emotional abuse and mental abuse. And so I think that people were like, you traitor, thought we were safe here with our, you know, terms and all that. Go for it. Like, you can say what you want to say, but I'm also here to help you not suck at getting divorced. That's the goal of the show.
Touche.
Right? So just everybody take a fucking breath. Take a beat.
Isn't it what people need to do these days anyway, whether you're divorcing or not? Take a load off.
Oh my God.
Don't be so serious about everything. God, I mean, everything is not that serious.
It'll be okay. I mean, Jesus, I feel like we are a hop, skip, and a jump away from needing to do a whole episode that's just like ASMR. Welcome to the calming hour. But like, come on, it's going to be okay, guys. We are here for you and we love you. Even if you got annoyed with us, we love you. That's okay. We're going to get through this.
We're like the best friends that annoy you on some days, and that's all right.
That's all right.
No one's perfect.
Put on your golf skirt and let's go.
Or your big boy pants.
Meet me on a tennis
court. Or your big girl pants.
Yeah.
Or your big pants.
Or your wear those bicycle shorts.
Your big bicycle shorts.
Seriously, you won't see me in them because my vagina is not comfortable with that. But yours might be. And I support that. Morgan's dying. Morgan is dying. Morgan's like, she just said vagina.
I'm sweat over here. It's like, should we cut that out? I mean, oh my God.
There's nothing wrong with saying it. It's beautiful.
There's nothing wrong with saying it, but I just can't. Now it's like,
now you're sweating.
I can't unsee it.
Okay, get my vagina out of your head, Morgan. You can't see it. Guys, it's not that kind of
shit. I know, but when you say something like that, that's all
you can see. That's why I said it. Morgan, we needed it. My God, how much more can we talk about narcissists? I'm sorry.
Okay. You took the load off.
Thanks. And now we have to go. Good night, friends. You're welcome for that laugh. See, we took you from ASMR to bicycle shorts and everything between. Guys.
Literally between.
See, there you go. Guys, we're here for you. We know that this is not easy. We do. You might be in a spot where you're ready to modify your child support. You might be in a spot where you're ready to bang your head up against a wall or jump out your window because you're trying to divorce a narcissist. But we get it. We love you and we will hold your hand through this process. This is not a sprint. It's a marathon. You're going to have good days. You're going to have bad days and you're going to have some really bad days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know what? Here's the thing. You're going to get through it and we're your community. We're here for you at all times. So tell your friends. We don't care. Tell your ex about us. Join us on Instagram. Join us on Facebook. Join us on Patreon app. We are here to get you through this and help you to not suck divorce. And at the end of the day, or at the end of this show, please just remember, you've got this and we've got you.
For more support, please join our private communities on Facebook and Patreon. The How Not to Suck at Divorce podcast is executively produced by Andrea Rappaport.